Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. So thrilled to be able to offer AMA Mondays, where I answer your questions that you guys have emailed me at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. We got some great questions here today, and I cannot wait to answer your questions. We got so many in, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if I select your question, you win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. So you email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, your questions, and I happen to select your question. Well, then you're able to say, hey, Charlie, you owe me a book, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
So let's get to the first question. Hello, Charlie. Who do you think was the worst Republican president in U.S. history? Who was the best Democrat? Love the show, Daniel. Great question. So I'd say that probably the worst Republican president in American history is probably a guy that was a hero and was a terrific general, but he was just awful, was Ulysses S. Grant. He was just not a good president. He was not up to the task. There were rumors, and there's been plenty of writings about how he was very fond of the bottle, let's put it that way, that he used to play poker out of the Treasury. There were some rumors that were once floated around. Not exactly a competent manager or president. He was technically a Republican, and I will not claim credit for him. Let's put it that way. There were other Republican presidents that were pretty awful. There were a couple other Republican presidents that were pretty questionable, but I'll put Ulysses S. Grant probably as the worst Republican president in American history. The best Democrat? Well, let's just be technical about this. The best Democrat was probably Andrew Jackson. He was an awesome president. He was a bitter racist, and he also mistreated Native Americans. I fully admit that. But he was a limited government lover. He actually balanced the budget. It was the last time the national debt was zero. And he was an American hero, okay? Just read the Battle of New Orleans. He was an absolute rock star. Andrew Jackson, one of my favorite American presidents, and also one of the favorite presidents of President Trump. He has a picture of Andrew Jackson actually in the Oval Office, and I have seen that picture a couple times personally and up close. It's pretty cool. When we rank presidents, presidents tend to grow in affinity over time. And so we also have to read what was actually written about them while they were president, not just looking retrospectively. So I think it's really instructive when you try to judge a president to judge what people were saying when the information was actually being distributed and processed. Because when you look retrospectively, we can make any president look good. And we can make any president that might have resigned in disgrace or was impeached like Andrew Johnson or Richard Nixon, and certain people think Richard Nixon was a great president. I was treated very well, I have to say, by the Nixon Library, and I learned some things about Richard Nixon. They were very nice to me, very kind, didn't necessarily see totally eye to eye on all of their interpretation of Richard Nixon's presidency, and but that's their prerogative. And they, again, it was one of the nicest visits I've ever done on the speaking circuit, so I want to give them credit for that. And Hugh Hewitt is the chairman of that board and does a really nice job there. But I wouldn't put Richard Nixon in the category of a good president by any stretch of the imagination. Lyndon Baines Johnson was absolutely awful, probably the worst, one of the worst Democrats in American history. If you get known by your initials, you're probably pretty bad in my book. So FDR and LBJ were awful. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a duplicitous, big government, precedent-setting, power-hungry president. Sir actually was elected to four terms, served three full terms, died in the fourth term. Harry Truman becomes president of the United States. Harry Truman completes the war, drops two atomic bombs on Japan. There was a rumor of a third one, ends World War II. The man from Missouri gets reelected and serves out that term when Truman beat Dewey. Remember, there was that old famous picture when polling was so inaccurate where it says, Dewey beats Truman, where I think it was the Chicago Tribune that actually reported it incorrectly, and then Truman served out that term. Then, of course, in 1952, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Ike, was elected as president of the United States, served two good terms. He was the perfect president for that time, for post-World War II reconstruction, nation healing, and getting America back on track during a time after such carnage and such horrible adversity that America had to face. And his vice president was Richard Nixon, served two terms with Dwight D. Eisenhower. And then Richard Nixon lost the 1960 election to JFK. JFK served 2.5 years, was assassinated. Lyndon Baines Johnson takes over. LBJ gets elected on the coattails of JFK in the 1964 election. In 1968, Richard Nixon then wins the presidency in a landslide election, wins again in 1972. Spiro Agnew resigns. Speaker of the House Gerald Ford becomes the vice president. Richard Nixon then resigns in disgrace. Ford becomes president in kind of a lame duck presidency. And guess who his chief of staff was, everybody? Youngest chief of staff to date, Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney became chief of staff to Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford gets somewhat primaried by then darling of the Republican conservative base, Governor Ronald Reagan of California. Gerald Ford runs in the 1976 election and loses to the peanut farmer from Georgia, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter wins on a Southern Democrat appeal. Fun fact about Jimmy Carter, actually. Jimmy Carter relaunched his election campaign in 1980 in the founding city of the KKK, pandering heavily to Southern Democrat racism. So anyone who says that the party switched is not looking at history correctly. Jimmy Carter was one of the worst presidents in American history. He was weak. He did not believe in American exceptionalism. He had that famous speech where he says, we just have to get used to a period of malaise. It was stagflation. Interest rates were 19%. Growth rates were negative. There was waiting lines around the corner for gas. Our hostages were taken by the Iranians. And there was very little hope, very little optimism. Of course, then the renegade from California. When the media attacked him as a cowboy with no plan and just smooth one-liners, they attacked Donald Trump the same way they attacked Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a movie star. He understood the language. He understood how to communicate. Go watch 1977 Ronald Reagan interviews. It was phenomenal. He talked about how government was the problem, not the solution. He believed the individual in the Americana spirit. And of course, in the last seconds of the campaign, believe it or not, it's really interesting. Jimmy Carter was outpacing Ronald Reagan in all the polling. And Pat Caddell, may he rest in peace, dear friend of mine. He was one of my political mentors. I spent more time with Pat Caddell learning about presidential politics than almost anyone else. And that's why I'm able to recite it just from this memory, because I spent hundreds of hours with Pat Caddell. And he used to tell me about how Jimmy Carter used to take his coffee, which I guess I could repeat. I believe it was decaf with two creams. I couldn't be misremembering that. But that was according to Pat Caddell. Pat Caddell recently passed away. And Pat Caddell was the presidential pollster for Jimmy Carter. And he saw the Reagan Revolution happening in real time. So Jimmy Carter was beating Ronald Reagan convincingly in all the polls. And then finally, Ronald Reagan pivoted into a message basically saying, I'm going to get our hostages back. And that resonated so much with the forgotten man and woman. And the polling just switched. The Saturday before the Tuesday of the election in November, all of a sudden the internal polling of the Carter campaign turned upside down. And they had no idea what was happening. And then Ronald Reagan got elected president in 1980. And that's a really hard thing to do, which is to beat an incumbent president on the first term. It's really, really hard to do that. Reagan serves two terms. Actually, and people forget this, we could do a whole podcast on presidents that got shot. It's really interesting. Did you know that Ronald Reagan, obviously, you know, he got shot. Did you know that Gerald Ford actually had two assassination attempts against him? People don't know that. In the streets of San Francisco, I could show you the hotel. There was actually two assassination attempts against Gerald Ford. The Secret Service was not as locked down as they are today. Ever since Reagan got shot in 82 or 83, I want to say, which was actually the inspiration for the Brady Bill. Ever since that, a president has not had a direct threat against his life through a firearm. There's been other attempts, obviously. When Bill Clinton was president, there was someone that stormed the White House grounds, and they were met with lots of Secret Service backlash, obviously. And then, of course, the modern history, I'm sure everyone listening knows quite well. H.W. Bush was elected to president in 88. Then in 92, the smooth-talking candidate from Arkansas, Bill Clinton, the comeback kid in New Hampshire, gets elected. Ross Perot played a big role in that. He picked up about 28% to 30% of the vote. Here's a fun fact for you. Bill Clinton never got more than 50% of the popular vote. He got a plurality, but he never got a majority. So that's a little modern American political history for you. I hope it's helpful. I love studying presidential history. I read biographies for fun. While other people go do things that aren't reading biographies, I'm reading about how Jimmy Carter liked his coffee. So before we get to the next question that you guys emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com, remember, if you email me a question and I select it, you get a signed copy of The MAGA Doctrine, New York Times bestseller, Amazon number one seller for a couple days. But I want to tell you about how you could protect your computer. You know there's bad guys out there. If you believe that, and if you believe there are foreign actors trying to get into your computer, you have to protect your computer. Build the wall. Build a wall around your computer and protect your computer from infiltration from the Chinese Communist Party or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. It's PC-Matic. That's what they do. All of PC-Matic's competition is made in foreign countries. Many exactly where the viruses originate. PC-Matic blocks annoying and malicious ads for hassle-free web browsing. I know, I hate it when these ads pop up, but guess what? They do not pop up anymore because of PC-Matic. So you can go to PCMatic.com/Charlie to get it. And they have PC-Matic is $50 for 5 devices for 1 year with a full day, 30-day money-back guarantee. They protect Windows, XP, Macs, Androids, you name it, they can protect it. I love it because I know that I'm secure. The Chinese Communist Party is probably targeting my computer right now. But it's safe because I have PC-Matic. It's safe because I've built a big, beautiful, wide, thick, impenetrable wall thanks to American programmers from PC-Matic. They love our country. So if you have antivirus software, you actually might be giving money to the enemy in a backdoor into your computer. PC-Matic is built by patriots for patriots so you can secure your computer against malevolent forces that want to see your credit card information, your emails, and your most private and sensitive communications. Don't let the bad guys into your computer. Build the wall. It's PCMatic.com/Charlie. So next question. Again, these are the emails at freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to make a very important correction. It's a nuance, but it's important, which is that Gerald Ford is actually not Speaker of the House. He was House Minority Leader, and he was appointed by Richard Nixon. Is close, but not exactly there. Thank you for the clarification, our amazing team at the Charlie Kirk Show. We want to be precise all the time here on the Charlie Kirk Show. Here is Melissa from New Jersey. Congratulations, you win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine because you asked a question, and I selected it at freedom@charliekirk.com. If you could watch a boxing match between two historical figures, who would you choose to compete? Well, I guess it would be people that would be most fascinating to watch. Let me think about this. Who would I want to see get beaten in a boxing match? And then additionally, who could I put up against him who would definitely beat that person in a boxing match? So I'd have Joseph Stalin up against Goliath. How about that? Joseph Stalin against Goliath, against one of the people that was rumored to be from the Nephilim. I think Joseph Stalin would get his little tail kicked. Studying the history of Joseph Stalin is really interesting. I'm actually working through a couple lectures on Joseph Stalin. And for those of you that might not be a big reader, by the way, and, you know, reading at times is difficult. I get it. I try to read as many books as I can. But when I can't read, I'm listening to lectures. Lectures are a great way to still synthesize very important information from some of the best scholars in society. And some of these scholars actually are people that used to be at universities and they left because of how leftist they were. And some of them, they might do adjunct teaching here and there. I'm working through a series of lectures on Joseph Stalin. Here's some really interesting information on Joseph Stalin. He was one of the top seminary students at a young age. He understood the Bible better than almost anyone else. Joseph Stalin obviously left from there, ended up becoming a well-renowned atheist. Stalin was probably responsible for more murders than anyone except Mao in the 20th century. Stalin was a brutal, murderous dictator. Stalin used to say that one murder is a tragedy and a million is a statistic. I mean, the guy was absolutely malevolent. One of my favorite pieces of film in the history of film is the best way that we have to go up against the communists and the socialists, which is mockery. I encourage you to check out the movie Death of Stalin. If you have not watched it, it is one of the most funny, ridiculing, accurate, and effective pieces of cinema ever to go against the communists. I don't even know if that was the intention, by the way, because I know some of those actors. I don't know them personally, but I know some of their political affiliation. And the fact that they might have voluntarily participated in an anti-Marxist film, I think would give them quite unease. But in the film Death of Stalin, it is such a beautiful mockery of the problems of central planning and the duplication of bureaucracy and how they trivialize and minimize evil. There's a well-created scene where they're talking about how they should kill their political dissidents. And essentially there's this conversation, this argument like, oh, we don't want to do it on the weekends. I don't want to have to ruin my vacation with my family. Can we wait till Monday till we kill and stamp out this village? And it's so accurate because the best form of satire is when it gets really right up close to the truth. And that's why the Babylon Bee does such a great job. It's because you can't tell whether or not the article from the Babylon Bee is actually true or whether it is something that is materially false. That's the best type of satire, when you can't actually tell. And with the death of Stalin, they would have these conversations about, well, Joseph would have liked us to kill at least half the people by now. If we want to fulfill Stalin's legacy, because Stalin dies and they have this big power struggle over who's going to succeed Stalin. And so I highly encourage it. And so I would love to see a boxing match between some guy. How about this? I would love to see Buster Douglas versus Joseph Stalin. Okay? Even better, Mike Tyson versus Joseph Stalin. Okay? I think Joseph Stalin deserves just some sort of brutal physical lesson. Now, maybe Joseph Stalin has some sort of boxing background that I'm not aware of, that I might have missed his biography. I don't think so. Stalin is one of the historical figures I think we do not talk about enough, that needs to be studied, needs to be understood. He was a full and committed Marxist. He referenced Marx and Rousseau all throughout his implementation. And most importantly, he was a huge follower of Hegel. Hegel is not talked about enough. The Hegelian dialectic could be the only piece of philosophy that could be applied for being responsible for both Nazi Germany and the USSR. Probably Hegel's the only one that could take credit for both of those. The Hegelian dialectic, I will do a podcast on that in the future, but it's one of the most instrumental, one of the most dark pieces of philosophy that had the most damage attributed to it in the 20th century. So thank you, Melissa from Jersey. Appreciate the question. I probably took that in a direction that you did not expect, but that's why you listen to The Charlie Kirk Show. Now, Melissa may or may not have student loans. I hope she doesn't. But if she does, there's only one way to get out of student loan debt. One way. That's Credible. Credible.com helps people get out of student loan debt. They're an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. They help people get out of student loan debt. If you've got student loan debt, you could benefit. With a lower rate, you could save on interest and lower your monthly payment. A shorter loan term could get you debt-free faster. Consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. Credible customers have given awesome reviews about how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. On Credible, you can see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 different lenders. Whereas other marketplaces, online marketplaces, you'll get a range of rates or ballpark estimates. It only takes a couple minutes to check rates, and checking rates does not impact your credit. They never sell your data, so you won't receive spam and phone calls for dozens of lenders. Please visit Credible.com/Charlie, that's Credible.com/Charlie, when you refinance your student loans. Using this link, they'll give you a $200 gift card. Fill in a few pieces of information, check out what rates you're eligible for. Again, that's Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. Let's get to more questions that you guys have emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. So Carl from Michigan says, what do you think about people comparing the murder of George Floyd to a reason for why Colin Kaepernick knelt for the national anthem? First of all, Colin Kaepernick is a coward and a failed athlete, okay? As soon as I get my back healed, I challenge Colin Kaepernick to a throwing competition with a couple weeks of practice myself, and I will be able to be more accurate and throw the ball better than Colin Kaepernick. That's right. Right here, right now, I am declaring a one-on-one Elite 11 style competition for accuracy and for proficiency of throwing a football versus Colin Kaepernick. My producer says, good thing you'll be indefinitely injured. You have never seen me throw a football, okay? There's a couple talents that I have, which is a very, very good free throw percentage, the ability to shoot three-pointers, and I can throw a football with lethal accuracy. If you don't believe me, you'll be able to see it on my social media channels or on charliekirk.com. But the coward Colin Kaepernick, who got cut from the San Francisco 49ers and started kneeling as a way to try to make himself feel good, victimhood mentality, complete and total illiteracy about the history of our country, and my friend Jimmy Garoppolo is now the new quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not challenging Jimmy to a throwing competition anytime soon, nor Joe Burrow, okay? But I would cross up Colin Kaepernick in any sport of his choosing at any time. And we could also do a history lesson while we're at it, by the way. Well, we could do it in real time. And I'll be very nice. I'll be very respectful. The whole thing will be filmed. But I say all of this for a reason. Because Colin Kaepernick is a coward. Colin Kaepernick will never face anyone head on. He'll never actually participate in the throwing competition against me because I will beat him. But also, that's not his style. The style of radical leftists, and there's actually a deeper philosophical point behind all the humor here, which is the style behind leftists and their guiding philosophy is not to face problems head on. It's to blame other people for those problems and create massive movement campaigns to give themselves power because they never actually could defeat that problem themselves. This is the whole victor versus victim and a deeper level of that. They could not actually go, as Jordan Peterson would say, slay the dragon. They could never actually have the confidence, the courage, the conviction to do what is difficult. Instead, they could complain about what might get in their way. So, look, Colin Kaepernick, he said, well, I did it to kneel for police brutality. That's complete and total nonsense. There is no systemic racism within police departments across the country. And I have said, go back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show a couple days, go back to our Friday episode, and go back to the opening that I did on George Floyd. I was very clear about how this was murder, about how this was evil, about how it was inexcusable, and how I correctly predicted that that particular individual, the police officer, probably had a pattern of violence preceding it. All of that was correct, and I stand by it. But I will not tolerate a complete and total indictment of law enforcement officers or the police community in general when their job is to protect individuals, protect our citizens, and they do a pretty good job of it. Now, look, I've dealt with police officers that I consider to be a little bit too cowboyish, and they're a little bit too, let's just say, cocky. Let's just call it for what it is. But a vast majority of my interactions with police officers have been fair and decent individuals that care about their community, that go above and beyond into the line of fire to try to protect us. And when they don't, and when they actually abuse that power, they should be held to justice, and they shouldn't be given excuses for that. And people that follow my commentary and my work, you know that I'm slow to hysteria, that I'm actually an anti-hysteria person. I think that panic is one of the worst things a human being can do. You don't think clearly. You usually do things you regret. I think we need to be anti-panic. And so people are comparing Colin Kaepernick trying to get attention and kneeling during the national anthem when we honor veterans to a false narrative around police brutality. It creates a very dangerous negative feedback loop. So what you're going to see now here is playing out the most ultimate example of confirmation bias. So for years, students are taught in school incorrectly that there is systemic racism with police forces, that they're too aggressive, and that they target people of color. There is no evidence of this, by the way. In the previous episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, I cite Heather McDonald's terrific article, and we're going to have Heather McDonald on the podcast very soon, hopefully. I reached out to her, and she's terrific, and I love her work. It's so fact-driven. It is so data-driven, and it is so refreshing to have someone that just cares about the statistics and the facts. This is in real time. Confirmation bias. So when you're told these things for so long, you're told these things for a decade, and it's built on lies, and then you see a singular piece of information that reaffirms that, despite the macro data being completely contrary to it, and Heather McDonald cited the study of Michigan State University and University Maryland College Park that shows no evidence of systemic racism or police-related aggression or shootings towards black people. And so now you have celebrities that are completely clueless on the topic, completely clueless on the data and the science. And I will happily debate anyone at any time on this because I actually understand the police data issue pretty well. Not as well as Heather McDonald, but I've had to go toe-to-toe with Black Lives Matter activists. I know that a police officer is 18 and a half times more likely to be shot by a black person than an innocent black person is to be shot by a police officer. Did you know that? 18 and a half times more likely that a police officer is likely to die in the line of fire by a black person than a black person is to die by them. And the great Ben Shapiro makes a great argument. If this was happening all the time, why do we know all these people's names? Why are we able to recite their names with such regularity? Because these incidents are awful and horrible, but they're actually really rare. And so that's a deeper, complex argument than some people are willing to even have right now. And so it's really interesting because the left always uses this and they misapply that argument towards us when we talk about how illegal immigrants are killing Americans. And we use those stories to actually point towards a macro trend. So the micro reflects the macro, like Kate Steinle's death. But then when the micro does not reflect the macro in this instance, when George Floyd was killed in an act of evil based on everything that we know to be true and all the evidence provided, you have individuals that are completely misinformed, that are quite honestly rather foolish, and they're making fools of themselves, and they're being praised for it, not because they're making any sort of wonderful insight, not because they're better informed, but because they have a huge following, and they've garnered that following for a variety of different reasons, whether it be Odell Beckham Jr., who happens to be really, really good at catching footballs with one hand, or LeBron James, who happens to be really good at losing. He's terrific. And so he just posted on his Instagram a picture of George Floyd being murdered by somebody kneeling on his neck, which, again, is inexcusable, and I will not minimize that, next to a picture of Colin Kaepernick kneeling. and basically said, this is why we kneel, is basically what he is saying. So what LeBron James is saying is that we kneel to protest something that does not happen all the time, and we dilute a remembrance of our country and our veterans. And so, look, I don't expect philosophical brilliance out of LeBron James. I just don't. I do not expect reasoned arguments, but I also do not want to have misinformation being spread throughout society. I don't like that. And so Twitter, who in a previous episode of Tech Tyranny, please go back and listen to it. It's doing quite well. We're getting great response on it. Twitter, who's all about misinformation, lockdown, they didn't do anything to date of the recording of this podcast when Ice Cube essentially had a picture of somebody that he's totally failed. Completely awful, by the way. Failed. I'll say it right here, right now, and I'll repeat it. Another failed rapper, Ice Cube, who has fallen out of the entire national conversation, is trying to get attention again, spread total and complete fake news around how this guy was a Trump supporter and used a picture to reaffirm it. And so Twitter decided not to take it down. It was not fact-checked. All the media gives them a complete pass. And so for LeBron James, you want to weigh in to this conversation? Okay, here we go. Where's your Instagram post about the million Muslims, Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps in your favorite country, China? Where's the Instagram post on that? So LeBron James, if you're all about human rights right now, if you're all about the innocent, why don't you talk about how the Chinese, a country that you have praised, a country that you benefit tremendously from financially because of the National Basketball Association's agreements with the Chinese Communist Party, why don't you talk about how China harvests organs? Why don't you talk about how the Chinese Communist Party surveils all their citizens? About how they make doctors who dare disagree with the status quo disappear? About how they didn't be honest about a virus that infected the entire world and led to lockdowns all across the planet? Or about how they have turned Hong Kong into a pseudo-police state and they have destroyed all autonomy against Hong Kong? About how they failed to recognize Tibet, which is a massive violation of human rights? About how they go after the people of Taiwan and they want total control of Taiwan despite the Taiwanese wanting to be their own autonomous country. Why are you so silent on this? Well, because LeBron James, you are not a human rights activist. You're not. And while I do respect individuals to have their free right to expression, you have no credibility in my eyes weighing in on this issue while you simultaneously defend the Chinese Communist Party putting a million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps. You might say, well, Charlie, he doesn't defend it. His silence is a form of defense. All it takes for evil to succeed or thrive is for good men to do nothing. Edmund Burke. And so if LeBron James says good things about the Chinese Communist Party and is silent about their atrocities, but he's simultaneously going after our police officers through no macro data supporting it, despite how evil that specific incident is, he has lost all credibility in my eyes and should lose the credibility in all people's eyes to weigh in on these very significant issues around human rights, politics, and life in general. Speaking of LeBron James, we have no NBA, NHL, or Major League Baseball action. Awfully depressing. I can't wait for college sports to get back, and you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker to blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. Do you miss the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can wager on, and NASCAR is back. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on Big Brother, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Go Ducks, go Cubs. You know how I stand. LeBron James, I hope you make the finals, and I hope you lose miserably to whomever you're up against. Not because of what I said previously. Well, maybe it's a little bit because of that. But I was a temporary LeBron James fan. I really liked when he came back to Cleveland and he did the triumphant return. And then I totally turned my back on that when he went to the Lakers and has changed his attitude to be totally political and anti-Trump, which really, really bothers me. So visit betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code podcast1. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I can't wait for sports to be back. So get ready for them at betonline.ag. So let's get to the next question. Tom from Nantucket. Congratulations, Tom from Nantucket. You emailed me your question at freedom@charliekirk.com. You get a signed personalized copy of the New York Times bestseller, MAGA Doctrine. He says, I'm a big fan, but I just want to know one thing you disagree with President Trump on. I know that you're a big Donald Trump fan, and for good reason. However, you think for yourself and advocate for people to think for themselves. So do you align 100% with the president all the time, and should anyone? This is a really good question. Thank you. I will give you a couple of examples. I will say you can be 100% supporter of Trump without agreeing with him 100% of the time. That's me. You can be 100% behind the president vocally and loyally, like I am, without agreeing with him on every single issue. There's already enough people bagging on the president. This guy has decided to put all of Western society on his shoulders, from Constantine to Aurelius to Cicero to Locke to Jefferson to the founding of our country. Basically, all of Western society hinges on a lot of the decisions that he makes. And he stands for strong borders, a restoration of America, a free economy, low taxes, a strong military, standing with our allies, and getting out of these ridiculous, self-defeating international organizations. Why would I spend my time ridiculing a president that is under attack from every single direction, including people from our own party? Now, with that being said, I can disagree with him on a couple things. For example, I can make the conservative case of why we should be against the death penalty. I do not believe the United States government should have the power to execute its own citizens. I used to not believe this. I used to believe, wow, that person just killed 6 innocent human beings, put them to death. But then I stopped myself. I said, should I give the government the power to do the greatest emotional response to what I feel to be fit? Once you give government power, it can be rarely taken away. There have been dozens and dozens of innocent individuals that have been executed because of the death penalty. One is too many, because the inverse is they're just sitting in prison for their entire life. And if they are exonerated or proven innocent, and I say proven innocent because they would have been previously convicted, so then the burden of proof is on them to be able to liberate themselves from that conviction. When traditionally you do not have to prove innocence, but once you're convicted, you have to work yourself backwards towards the assumption of innocence. Once you kill somebody, you can't reverse that. And we have killed innocent people far too often. Also, the death penalty is far too expensive. And I've done an entire podcast on the death penalty. You guys can go all the way back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show. I don't want to spend too much time on the death penalty. But I do not agree with the president on every single decision that he makes. No one would, unless you're the president. But I'm 100% behind him because I believe in his guiding philosophy, his big picture goals, and the big things he fights for and argues for. In fact, the majority of things he fights for, I am 100% behind. Could not be a more vocal defender. And look who's opposing him. People like Ilhan Omar have dedicated her life to destroying Donald Trump. That alone should get you to crawl over glass to vote for Donald Trump this November. There is no choice. Here is the choice. Do you love America? You know how you kind of see those little charts sometimes, how you can make the best decisions? Okay, take out a piece of paper. Do you love America? Yes. No. If yes, you're voting for Trump. If no, you vote for Biden. That's the decision-making matrix for 2020. It's that simple. And people are going to say, well, Charlie, that's your equivalent of if you're black, you need to vote for Joe. Well, no, I'm talking about if you love the country, because I do not see how if you love the country, you can vote for someone that sold our country out to the Chinese Communist Party through his proxy son. I do not believe that if you love America truly for what America is, you could vote for a person that wants to make Shanghai great again, that keeps our borders open, that does not believe in a unified language, that does not believe in free enterprise, that does not believe in justices like Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. I don't understand how you could possibly make the argument that that person would love America. And by the way, immutable characteristics have zero to do with voting. Let me put it that way. That Joe Biden is talking about something that is immutable. The love for America can change based on your own perspective. Patriotism. If you love the United States of America, the choice is for Donald Trump. If you want a restoration of greatness, if you want a return to the greatest days of our country, Donald Trump is the option. Through stronger borders, through a defense of our history and our culture, through a strong national military, and through someone who is relentless in putting the left on defense. We have to understand that it's broader than a political war. The left culturally has been winning for far too long. And for the first time, we have a president that is willing to engage in the culture war and win in that culture war. Being able to call out the leftist activist media when they blatantly misrepresent what's happening and they lie. The president's put them on defense. To call out the emptiness and the vacuous nature of the Hollywood elites. To call out the tech companies and actually sign executive orders against them. This is a courageous president. So people say, well, Charlie, why don't you criticize the president? Why would I criticize him? I can disagree with him, of which I will do, and of which I have. But there's enough people that have made a career, that have made it their diabolical mission to destroy the defender of the West. My job is to defend the defender of the West. And these people, I say, well, I need to call balls and strikes against the president. Who made you umpire of American politics? Put on a jersey and defend our civilization. And that's not to say you have to defend every single thing that is tweeted or is said. You're not his defense lawyer. But you need to defend the big picture aims and objectives and goals, the philosophy of what he is trying to accomplish and what he is accomplishing every single day. If you love our country, you have a moral right to defend the person who is trying to defend it and restore it every single day. So next question, freedom@charliekirk.com. Susie from Louisiana, congratulations to you. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. She says, I have a question about vote by mail. She said, Twitter is now flagging the president's tweets about voting by mail as false and misleading. Can you provide some examples of why fact checkers are wrong and are at least being deceptive? Happy to. Thank you. Number one, did you know that 28 million mail-in ballots went missing in the last four elections? 28 million. What happened to those ballots? Were they submitted? Were they sent in? And who did they vote for? Probably didn't vote for Republicans. I think that's pretty fair to say. Did you know that over 700 suspicious ballots were sequestered after the county district's attorney received an off-the-charts number of complaints from voters? Did you know an 89-year-old woman was just shipped 83 mail-in ballots in California? Did you know in 2017, a grand jury indicted a man for allegedly taking a Dallas woman's blank mail-in ballot, filling in a candidate's name, and delivering it to the county elections department? Did you know in 27 states, a voter can designate someone else to turn in their ballot, which literally leads to ballot harvesting and people filling in the ballot for you? Did you know that most people actually don't even fill an entire ballot? They leave a lot empty, therefore having a gateway for people to fill in the ballot for you? Here's an example. The registrar in Orange County, California, reported, quote, in 2018, his office had people dropping off maybe 100 or 200 ballots. This is why Orange County has 5 out of 5 Democrat congresspeople. Did you know a bipartisan commission led in part by former President Jimmy Carter, who of course was a Democrat peanut farmer, one of the worst presidents in American history, as we nicely detailed earlier in this episode, concluded that mail-in ballots were, quote, remain the largest source of potential voter fraud, end quote. A Democrat, and a weak Democrat at that. Do you know in Los Angeles, over 100,000 inaccurate voter registration records were generated after a technical glitch? Did you know that the system inaccurately enrolled some voters for vote by mail and 1,500 non-citizens were allowed to register to vote? Did you know in the last 2 weeks, the Department of Justice announced an elections judge in Pennsylvania admitted and pled guilty to accepting bribes to stuff ballots? Did you know that mail-in ballots from South Carolina somehow ended up in Maryland? Do you know that in Hennepin County, prosecutors have charged a 22-year-old, which is right near Minneapolis, by the way, with 13 counts of voter fraud? I'm going to mispronounce this name, but did you know that Habdakamin Amin Essa allegedly helped 13 people fraudulently cast absentee ballots in 2018? The charges filed say he told officials he was working for a campaign. This was conveniently in the ingrate Ilhan Omar's district. Did you know that a USPS mail carrier was just arrested and charged with attempted election fraud? Did you know that the Office of Special Counsel determined that the U.S. Postal Service broke federal law by allowing its workers to boost the Clinton campaign in 2017? Basically, we know to be true that mail-in balloting increases the chain of custody of a ballot and thus increases the incidence of fraud. Without mail-in balloting, there cannot be vote harvesting, which is a key tool in the Democrat toolbox to steal an election. Without mail-in balloting, there is zero chance of ballots being stolen or not cast on time. And we need voter ID. Why do you need an ID to board an airplane, rent an R-rated movie, buy a firearm, rent a car, enroll your kid in school, do anything in civilized society except vote? But the people always say, well, Charlie, voting is a right and those other things are not a right. You just made the greatest self-defeating argument in American history. If it is a right that we fought a civil war over, if it is a right that we poured all of our blood out to defend the right of expression and vote, isn't that a really good reason to make sure that the person's voting is the person who they say they are? Doesn't that reinforce the argument that we better make pretty sure that every single vote is correctly counted and it's correlated to the individual that needs their voice represented? You make the argument for voter ID when you say that it's a right and these other things are not a right. You're correct. We should have an ID to vote. I don't think you need an ID to rent an R-rated movie. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But renting an R-rated movie is superfluous. It really doesn't matter, in my opinion, whether or not the person is really who they say they are. Voting is fundamental to a civilized society, to a republic. The left wants to use ballot harvesting, the dilution of votes, and voter fraud to get themselves back into power. It's how they took Orange County. It's how they took Oregon. It's how they're going to take Virginia. And now they're using the virus as a reason to push mail-in voting. Joe Biden had his spokesperson, because he did not come up with this on his own, say that people should not choose between their health and voting. Then why on earth do we have grocery stores open? You need food to live, Joe Biden. Not all of us have butlers that can deliver us food in our basement while you just try to cool off after you tell black people they aren't black if you don't vote for you. Not all of us are able to be served by a Downton Abbey-style banquet force that the ruling class can only enjoy. Some of us actually have to drive to a grocery store. If you can drive to a grocery store, if you can go to a beach, you can go to a polling place. The reason why the Democrats are pushing for this and the reason why Twitter, in connection with them, are banning dissident voices that might be talking about this and expressing these ideas is they need voter fraud and they need ballot harvesting to keep themselves in power. Because guess what? They sense a revolution happening. They sense an unbelievable unease happening in America. This is why Mike Garcia won in Katie Hill's old district. There's a Republican red revolution wave coming. One of the only tactics they have left is exactly how JFK won in 1960 against Richard Nixon. Manufacture the votes. Find them. Change the ballots. Cheat your way to victory. Or continue to bring in people from all the way around the world, give them guest worker visas and eventually gateway to citizenship, and then they'll vote for the Democrats. These are two strategies the Democrats have used so well. This is why we must end all immigration into our country until we get back to pre-pandemic employment levels. And it's going to be a while till we get there. 41 million people are out of work. And for the 9 Republican senators out there that are advocating for more guest worker visas, I have a lot of questions about who you're really representing. And it's not the United States of America, and it's not our citizens. You might be representing some corporate interests, but you sure as heck are not representing our country. 9 Republican senators, while 41 million people are out of work, are trying to bring in guest workers into our country. Because they say Americans won't do that job. That is nonsense, balderdash, foolish, and there's no facts behind that at all. You can go back to our episode with Ann Coulter, and she disproves that so beautifully in 30 seconds or less. Please go back and listen to it. The left will use all public policy to advance their diabolical agenda. It's time for us to start to identify it, spot it, fight it, and eliminate it so we can still have a fair and free country and a republic style of government. Hey, Charlie, what was your favorite TV show growing up? Thanks so much, Svetlana from South Carolina. What a name, Svetlana. Svetlana, it's an amazing name. Thank you, Svetlana from South Carolina. You just won a signed copy of The MAGA Doctrine, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. You guys can email me and your question is if you're selected, you get a signed copy of The MAGA Doctrine. Well, Svetlana, thank you for your question. Growing up, I loved Seinfeld and I loved Frasier. I'm such a Seinfeld guy that if you pull up any episode of Seinfeld at any period of time, I can basically recite 1/4 of the lines that are about to be said from memory. I can commit them to. I get my kind of dry, dark sense of humor from Jerry Seinfeld. Kramer was my least favorite character. He was a little slapsticky. George Costanza might be the greatest character ever created in the history of television. Why? George Costanza lived out the archetype of the cursed person. No matter what George Costanza touched, it turned to misery. It was the inevitability of destruction with George Costanza, and his lightheartedness and the humor around it and Jerry's commentary was phenomenal. It was terrific. Everything from the great part about Seinfeld, it was literally about nothing. It was about, why do you think that salsa is the number one condiment in America? And George would say, I don't know. And Jerry would say, because people love to say salsa. And it must be impossible for a person with a Latin accent to be able to order seltzer instead of salsa. I want seltzer, not salsa. I want seltzer. I want salsa. One of the greatest scenes ever. And actually, I can say this. I can tell you 12 Seinfeld episodes right now that would be picketed, protested, and taken off air right now if they weren't being aired on TBS and the Social Justice Warriors never watched TBS. So they probably don't even know this stuff exists. There are so many episodes. I can name them. Soup Nazi? No way would they let that on TV right now. No way. The Black and White Cookie? No way would they let that on TV right now. No way. When George Costanza, when Kramer runs for head of the retirement community? No way. When Uncle Leo accuses the chef of being an anti-Semite? No way would they let that on TV. It's some of the greatest humor that built our modern society today, and it would not be allowed on television today. This is why Jerry Seinfeld says he refuses to perform on college campuses, because he says that young people can literally not take a joke, that young people cannot literally take a joke. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. FreedomAtCharlieKirk.com, FreedomAtCharlieKirk.com. I want to end the show by naming the names. I hope that they will fix their ridiculous stances on this, but there are 9 Republican senators that have decided that they want to have more foreign labor during the time of a national crisis when 41 million Americans can't find work. Lindsey Graham, John Cornyn, Senator Risch, Senator Crapo, Senator Rounds, Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, Senator Lankford, Senator Young. I invite any one of them to come on our podcast, and I will uninterrupted allow you to make the case for why non-American citizens should be imported into our country right now when 41 million Americans can't find work. When I'm getting calls and emails of people pleading to come work for me at Turning Point USA, they'll say, I will take out the garbage. I will lick the floors with my tongue. I want a job. Now, they actually won't say they'll lick the floors of the tongue, but you understand what I mean by that. The sense of urgency, the amount of job applications we're getting at Turning Point is the highest I've ever seen. There's 41 million Americans out of work and 9 Republican senators that I'm going to say with as much love and grace as magnanimous as I can, I hope you'll reconsider, because your political future will not be very strong after this. I do not know what interests you are representing if you want to bring more foreign workers into our country during a national crisis. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider. Hit subscribe. Give us those 5-star reviews. And I'll give away 5 more books for free right now. Email me your favorite TV show that you watched growing up. Thanks so much, everybody. God bless.